Welcome to the Isle of Burke. Home to Vikings and dragons and a young boy called Hiccup who can speak the magical language of Dragonese. Across the stormy seas is the Isle of Mystery, the woods that howled, the dungeons of the danger brutes, and the Island of Silence. All of these places contain stories just waiting to be told, stories that were born from a map. Welcome to What's Your Map? An Oculi Mundi exploration. I'm Jerry Broughton, a map historian. In this podcast, we hear from those who live, love, and work with maps, making, preserving, interpreting, and being inspired by them. In each episode, we ask our guests to unfold a map that is special to them and to tell us the story that lies behind it. To follow the map as we talk about it on this podcast, go to oculi-mundi.com. Here be dragons. From lore to crafting characters and inventing vast, rugged landscapes, today's guest has used all of these ingredients to create a very special world, beloved by millions of children and adults across the world. Cressida Cowell is most famous for her series, How to Train Your Dragon, which was first published in 2003. The series centres on a young Viking called Hiccup, a member of the Hairy Hooligan tribe, as he goes on many adventures with his dragons, Toothless and Windwalker. The book has been adapted into three feature films by DreamWorks. Her latest book, Fight of the Flamestrike, is the second book in the How to Train Your Dragon school book series. We're really lucky to have you here with us today, Cressida. Thanks for joining us on What's Your Map? And first things first, please let me know what your map is.
Well, my map is the Isle of Burke and the surrounding barbaric archipelago. Okay. So, the barbaric archipelago has so many islands on it. There's Visithug territory, Basham, Villainy, Hysteria, Berserk, the woods that howled, the mazy multitudes, the outcast lands, Silence, the Bog Burglar Islands, the Isle of Burke.
Which are you particularly thrilled with? Where would you go?
I mean, I sort of feel Isle of Burke is where I started. I do love the Bog Burglar Islands, but I'm very attracted always to where I haven't been yet. I've been to the Bay of the Broken Heart. I think it's where I haven't been that I'm interested in going in the future.
We've all been to the Bay of the Broken Heart. Take me around the archipelago.
Okay. Now, this archipelago is inspired by a real place. It's inspired by the Inner Hebrides, where I partly grew up as a child. Yeah. So it's based on a real place. I grew up in London in a house without a garden, but my dad's job was in London, but he was a mad keen bird watcher. So every year when I was a baby, we'd be dropped off on an uninhabited island off the west coast of Scotland and picked up again 2 weeks later. Nothing on the island, no houses, no. And from when I was 9, my dad had a house built on the island, and then we spent the whole summer there, exploring in a house with no electricity. One house with no electricity. And so we were catching fish to eat. And this was the place the Vikings first came to and the last place they left.
This is amazing. I didn't know this, Cressida. So what's the island?
Well, they didn't really leave, by the way, because they stayed to settle. They came as pirates and they stayed to settle. So,
and we know that they're really still there.
Yeah. And their stories are still there. And they stayed to settle, and loads of people in there, Inner and Outer Hebrides, are descended from Vikings. And Vikings believed that dragons were real. So the little island, the real island, is called Little Colonsay. And Not Big Colonsay. Not to be confused by Big Colonsay. Just next door to Staffa, Fingal's Cave, Staffa, in an archipelago of islands. Beautiful archipelago. You can see Iona, you can see Ulva, Gometra, the Treshnish Isles. And you can imagine, if you're going out in a little boat to catch fish to eat, which we were spending your whole summer on the island, you need to have sea maps all around you in that little house that has no television, so no electricity. Because you have to not hit a rock or do anything like that. And so I was already creating maps when I was a little girl. My sister is a map maker. She does maps for other people's books. She creates maps for other people's books.
You're obsessed with maps. The entire
we're
family.
We're all obsessed with maps.
We're all obsessed with maps, and you grew up with maps. And when you were drawing the maps, did you, presumably, you had maps of the archipelago?
Yeah, of the real Scottish archipelago, where there are real names like Muck and Egg and Rum. So you can see how the Isle of Burke might fit into that particular map.
Does it bear any passing resemblance? Presumably when you were drawing it, were you thinking about the archipelago where you spent your childhood? Is this very different? Give me a sense of the connections and the distinctions. What's it like and what's it not like?
Well, it's not an exact replica because I'm writing fantasy, not history. I mean, although the actual history is fascinating. So I'm writing fantasy. What I'm writing is the Neverland. The Neverland is a map of a child's mind. Yeah, Peter Pan. You can see bits of real things. I can't remember the rest of the quote. I could probably get out. You can see bits of the real world in the map poking through. I'm writing a story about growing up with a villain with a hook, about flying, about a little island, and about a Neverland, yeah? Going back to my own childhood. So when I draw the map of the Isle of Burke, you know, there are bits of the real island of Little Colonsay that are poking through, like just like the map of the Neverland. But that's also taking it off it in its own fantasy direction. So I'll start drawing the map, the Isle of Burke. And this is the first book's a set, and the first movie is actually a set, but movie is set on the Isle of Burke. And it's strangely a little bit like the shape of the real island. But as soon as I draw the map, the story comes creeping out of the map at me. And that's another quote. That's actually a quote from Treasure Island.
Let's talk about this, because I'm fascinated that you've referenced this and I've written about this. Isn't it the most amazing, amazing story? He draws the map first. Tell me about it, because I'd love your view on this. It's so great. Well, see, it's a rainy day. He's bored. He's with his stepson. Is that right? And he starts drawing and he says, suddenly it all came to me and I drew the island.
As I drew the map, Long John Silver came creeping out of the map at me, his cutlass between his teeth. And he was not an illustrator, was he, Robert Louis Stevenson? But as he drew the map, the story came to him. And I think this is very much, you know, when you draw, it's a link to your unconscious. It's a link to your unconscious, and things come out as you draw. And as you draw the map, the places on the map are suggesting ideas. So I begin drawing, he begins drawing a map, and Long John Silver appears. I begin drawing Wild Dragon Cliff. And as soon as I'm drawing it, I'm thinking, who lives in Wild Dragon Cliffs? Why are there wild dragons? You know, what is going on there? So it's giving me ideas for the stories. And I'm also, it's treating an imaginary place as if it's a real place. So as soon as I've drawn Wild Dragon Cliff, I know how long it takes to get from Wild Dragon Cliff to Hooligan Village. It's making the imaginary place feel real. So it's an idea generator, and it's also giving you, your unconscious is giving you ideas for stories.
And it's a plot. So I love this idea that a plot, of course, is a map in the archaic English. But a plot is the skeleton of the story that you create, and that's what you do. And you, like all, if I may say, all the great writers of these sort of great fantasy stories do the same. Tolkien does the same. C.S. Lewis does the same. Robert Louis Stevenson does the same. They're all fascinated by using maps as a foundation for the stories that they tell, aren't they? I just think this is so endlessly fascinating because you think of a map as being about space and you think of a story as being unfolding through time. But actually, the two are intimately connected, aren't they? I mean, that's what you show with the books.
Yes. And Neverland is the map of a child's mind and indeed of a writer's mind. And your unconscious is much cleverer than you are. Maps are about finding out where you are and getting lost all at the same time. The joy of getting lost all at the same time. And that's the act of creation, really.
And the act of fiction, isn't it? I mean, fiction is about, it's both creating a world in which you get lost, but you're also guided through it. It's like a map. I mean, the similarities I always find are so fascinating. The way in which you need to create your world through a map, which is really what you've done. And there is such a continuity in that tradition. And I wonder, I mean, it does strike me how much it connects to things like the Tolkien maps. Take me through it with the archipelago again. Did you start by drawing Isle of Berk?
Yeah.
Is that where you start? Because it's not in the centre, but is in a way, because of the importance for the stories of the Isle of Berk. Does everything then start to sort of flow around that? Or how did you first start to conceive of it?
You start it because that's where Hiccup grows up. And it's a bit like a child growing up. The How to Train Your Dragon series grows up like the child is. A huge theme is about growing up. The series literally grows up. So the first four books are quite kind of humorous, and that's almost like a smaller child kind of discovering themselves. Yeah, that's what children do. The second four books, you realise there's a bigger quest for Hiccup. He needs to learn about his responsibility as a leader. You know, there's a larger quest. You know, so the first books are about his relationship with his parents. And as you go through the books, the second, you know, and the middle act, as I would say, of the 12 series are about him discovering that there's a larger quest, you know, his responsibility towards his tribe. And the last epic four books are about whether he can save the dragon. So his responsibility to the whole environment, you know. So it's about, so you begin at Berk with the smaller relationship of Hiccup himself and his relationship with his peers, actually, as well as with his father, his parents. And as you visit the other, as you go outward to the wider map, you're beginning to discover a larger his relationship. And that's what happens with children when they grow up. That's what they're going through. So all of it is all of it is thought through.
I love how Cressida's stories follow the journey of childhood and connect learning, the imagination, world building, and mapping. But before we continue to hear about how Cressida builds worlds and even invents languages, I'd love for you to join our global community of explorers by subscribing to this podcast. From mapping the cosmos to journeying to the North Pole, we have a wealth of episodes for you to enjoy. And subscribing means you won't miss a single new map, guest, or story from this series or the next. Now, back to Cressida and Dragonese. There is a really clever way in which you are tapping into those really universal ideas, aren't you, about quest, heroes, monsters, you know, a sense of, you describe it yourself, you know, some literary theorists would say, you know, there are only really five stories in all literature. And you have very, very, I think, cleverly, you know what you're doing here, and you know what touchstones you're kind of pressing. And I mean, so I'm always interested in you sort of self-consciously talking about why the books are so appealing, because they do touch so many really foundational ideas. You know, the relationship with the father, you know, the relationship to outsiders, to, you know, a quest, you know, there are so many of those issues there. Just talk to me a little bit about that, because you know what you're doing.
But I suppose I also enjoy getting a bit lost as well, because that's where all the most interesting things are found. You know, if you can't get lost into the woods, you know, going into the woods sometime, you know, you've got to get a little bit lost, because otherwise it isn't exciting. But yes, I certainly do know what I'm doing. Well, pretending that I'm not knowing what I'm doing.
No, but you know what I mean. I mean, I think the way in which, you know, you pick on certain ideas, even that, you know, you look at the map and the map itself is Homeric. I mean, it is about a quest.
Yeah.
The whole series very much is about a quest. It's also about, you know, almost anthropological ways in which you cross certain thresholds, you know, from childhood into teenage life, the relationship with the parents. And dragons are a great way of mediating so many of those relationships, aren't they?
They certainly are. Absolutely. Dragons do represent the wild and what we don't know. And I think, you know, that there's a longing for a world that, you know, we've charted so much, human beings, yeah? And there's a longing for the unknown, for uncharted territories, you know, that we sense that we've lost our way in a different kind of a way, because we've got almost too, you know, we've got too good at the old, you know, map making, and we want we're seeking the unknown territory, because we're still the same human beings who relatively recently, it's in human development, it's so recent, those maps, you know, the weird maps of the America where it was completely the wrong shape and looks like a map in one of my storybooks, in the context of human existence, they're so recent, aren't they?
Yeah. They are, although I think quite quickly we've suddenly shrunk back to not really drawing maps. That's why I find yours so beguiling, because it's really now almost in the realm of fiction that hand-drawn maps are being made, because people aren't really doing that. They're going online and they look at a map and they just find a place. They're not looking at the map because of the wonder of the territory. They're looking at how they get from one place to another. So I think it's very interesting that fiction is a place where people retreat, or not retreat, but find a sense of the wonder of the world in maps like this, because they're not doing it in any other environment. Kids aren't drawing maps. I go into school and try and show kids how you orientate. So you say, where's north, where's south, where's east, where's west? And they don't really know. So you have to orientate them. And you say, well, let's start by drawing a map, you know, with north at the top. So it's quite funny about your map, because if the Roman Empire is down at the bottom, down there, you're orientated with north at the top, you know. So I think these are really kind of really powerful ideas that you get. You start to lose a sense of your natural world because you're not even seeing, nor are you drawing maps.
Yeah, that is so, I hadn't thought, you should try asking them to draw a fantasy map, and then, you know, because actually, they might get them doing it. But I totally agree with you. We kind of went around with the A to Z. I mean, maybe it's just that I'm fascinated by maps, and my dad was fascinated. You know, he always had an ordnance survey map. There's no wonder me and my sister are so obsessed. He always had an ordnance survey map, and he would get it out, and he would have very precise maps of the, you know, the really big ones that he would unfold, and he would very seriously look at it, and then he would get us seriously lost. His quest really was to get us lost as it was getting dark. So yes, that makes me so sad. You know, we've got to get, because children naturally, you know, they are natural map makers. I mean, I remember my daughter, she went to nursery school, and she happened to be at a nursery where, you know, the playground was titchy. I mean, it was literally, it wasn't only a playground. It was right on a main road. It was like a little church kind of thing. But mostly they got to sometimes play on a Tuesday in the sort of graveyard bit of the nursery. And she came back one day and she said, it was too wet, Mummy. I didn't get to play in the Spiderlands. So she turned this little funny little graveyard bit, which was the size of a handkerchief, really, into the Spiderland. You know.
She's almost speaking Dragonese.
She's speaking Dragonese.
Of course, we're going to keep on obsessing with maps. But also then the question of not only inventing maps, but then also inventing new languages. So that dictionary that you have in Fight of the Flamestrike, tell me a bit about that, because they are connected, really, aren't they? You create a world, you draw the map, you then create a new language, which again is about building this sort of fantasy world. But you need to do it. It's a building block, surely, isn't it, to create convincing stories. So you're doing maps and you're using language, and that's what compels people. Tell me a bit about the dictionary and some of your favourite words. Some of them are great. But tell me a bit about that.
Well, Robert McFarlane writes beautifully about this, about lost words. I mean, he's so inspiring on lost words and how important it is to have the words for nature and the words that you lose. I mean, I was inspired for the Dragonese also by, you know, Vikings really did. They were called these incredible Magnus Barelegs, Ivar the Boneless, Ragnar Shaggy Pants. I mean, wonderful descriptive names that describe, you know, like the landscape. You know, like the landscape is describing silence. Is an island where these silent. It's the male half of the bog burglar tribe, which I've never written about, by the way. I've never written about the silence, which are on my original archipelago. But the
well, you can't because they're silent.
Maybe that's why I can't.
You can't. You can never write about them.
But one day there's a story out there, you see. I've written the island. It's on the map. And therefore there's a story out there that has to happen about the silence. And why do the male half of the bog burglar tribe, like a male boarding school, you know, which is Kamikaze, the girl hero's father. I mean, you know, it's a whole story waiting to happen on that map, on that island. Anyway, yeah, so the Dragonese is playing games with language, but it's also bringing out qualities of intelligence in children. Shakespeare, you know, made up loads of words, more words than anybody else in the English language. And what they find when, you know, they there's lots of research to show that, you know, they put electrodes on people's brains when they were listening to Shakespeare, and they discovered that new neural pathways were being formed in the brain in order to, you know, there's a map. Neural pathways being created in order to understand the Shakespeare. And it's the way he uses verbs instead of nouns and, you know, makes up words. And anyway, so that was the inspiration for Dragonese. So some of it makes you laugh. You know, me mama na like it, yum yum on de bum. My mother does not like to be bitten on the bottom. Who can blame her? Other stuff makes them think. So there's a word in Dragonese for mouse, and that word is squeaky snag. And that makes you look at a mouse through the eye of a dragon. Empathetic thinking. In one word, squeaky snag. There's a word in Dragonese for the largest number anybody's ever heard of, and then add one. And that makes a kid think, how can there be a largest number of anybody has ever heard of if you can still add one? And it's kind of something, something Googleplex plus oos.
Yes.
That's philosophical and mathematical thinking in one word. So the Dragonese is getting the kid, and they love it. You know, they love made up words, but it's also training their little brains to do little, it's a little gymnasium for the child's brain. You know, it's like poetry or anything, yeah. Any game with language.
Yeah. Yeah. Through language and through maps. We could talk forever about the world of maps and also fiction. But Cressida, I wonder if, as you build these worlds and you've done them so incredibly and people are so beguiled by them, what words of advice you'd have for people working in this area and the importance of maps about how you build your fictional worlds?
It's incredibly important, I think. I mean, even if you're not writing fantasy, I think all of it is about making a lie feel real, and basing it on something, because it's not really a lie. It's something true. It is something true. I mean, you know, you're always dealing with something true. So the more that you can, I feel, draw a map, the more you're treating that fantasy as if it's real. But I'm now coming away from this. You see, I'm now coming away from this thinking that I should be getting those maps out as well of real places, of discovering places, you know, because, you know, maps are stories as well. I'm wanting to go back to the big maps, you know, the stories. One of the biggest things that there's so many things about I miss about walking with my father. But one of the things I miss is that all of the stories that he knew about all of the places, he not only had an intimate knowledge of that because he was so obsessed with maps of the countryside, but he began to know all of the stories and where those stories came from. If you know the names for places, if you know where things are, you can start finding out the stories and the histories behind them, and you're bringing the world alive. He always knew, and it was like he knew the names of the birds as well.
It's a beautiful homage to him. I did an exhibition a few years ago called Talking Maps. The idea being, we talk about maps, but maps also speak in a way that we forget. They generate stories, which is really something that you've done, I think, with the How to Train Your Dragon books. Cressida, honestly, it's been an absolute pleasure, real pleasure. I wish we could carry on talking. Maybe we will. We'll do another session on maps and fiction. Maps and fiction just is an endlessly wonderful story. And, you know, just as I think, you know, as for me, you know, you take your place in that tradition of the great fantasy writers through Tolkien and Lewis and the great Robert Louis Stevenson in what you've done using maps in the series. And long may it continue. So here's to more maps and more dragons. Cressida, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Pa Earwig. Or thank you for listening, as they say in Dragonese. What a joy to speak to Cressida Cowell, the award-winning author of How to Train Your Dragon series. And what an end to this brilliant series of What's Your Map? We'll be going on a break for summer, but we'll be back with more mischief and audio adventures in the autumn. I'm Jerry Broughton, a map historian. This has been an Oculi Mundi exploration. The producer is Emily Uchida Finch, and it's a Whistledown production. Oculi Mundi is the online home of the Sunderland collection of antique maps and atlases. You can read more about the Sunderland collection and send suggestions for future maps to explore at oculi-mundi.com.